From Black Powder Headquarters and the Bojangles Studio at Three Falls Cabin in the North Georgia Mountains, it's time for O'Neill Outside. For anything in the outdoors, this is your source. Listen in and call the show with your comments or questions. And now, here's O'Neill.
From the Bojangles Studio high in the mountains of North Georgia, this and Three Falls Cabin. I'm sorry I'm behind. This is O'Neill Outside, bringing you Works Radio. I'll get it all right in a moment. Welcome to the program, everyone. 2 hours of outdoors headed your way. No politics, no finance, no discussions about other than fishing, hunting, camping, outdoors, spending some time with your family and enjoying it. We all have lots of time off now, it seems, but we won't comment about the situation or anything of that nature. We're enjoying ourselves this morning, and I hope you'll join us. You can listen to O'Neill Outside at WSB and 95.5 FM out of Atlanta, covering 38 states, the 155 SB Nation stations coast to coast. That's sports broadcast, so that you'll know, and I get chastised for that frequently. And so we'll, and this program is brought to you on video on Facebook by Monday afternoon or Tuesday. So why not join us? The telephone numbers are 404-872-0750. 404-872-0750 in the greater Atlanta area. And across the world at 800-972-8255, 800-972-8255. We'll have a busy morning, as always. We'll have the Medal of Honor, the mailbag. We'll have the True Turn Tackle Tip, the radio prize package, the prize package coupon for Rocco's Pub, and, of course, your calls. You can watch O'Neill Outside on the Fox Video, Fox Networks, that is, and the VOD networks. And if you go to O'NeillOutside.com, you can find every place you can watch it, include the website. So, what do you say? Let's get together and talk this morning about the outdoors. Again, the telephone number is 404-872-0750 or 800-972-8255. And let's get started when we get back.
Kept the bars to fill the hole. Love the lights, stole the show. Someone I used to know.
Every Saturday morning at the top of each hour to mention to you our sponsors. If there are no sponsors to O'Neill Outside, there is no show. So we're proud to have these first-class sponsor associates, so give me a moment. Works Tools, that Hydroshot really works. Stripling's General Store. Tough Shed. We've got a Tough Shed outside. Been there 2 years. Rock solid. That's where I've got all my fishing tackle. Snellville Heating and Air. They look after everything. Rocco's Pub, great place for wings. Georgia Department of Natural Resources, State Parks and Historic Sites. Big Green Egg Smokers and Grills. True Turn Hooks and Roadrunner Lures, Arctic Ice Freezer Packs. I don't have to buy any ice anymore for the coolers. The Podcast, and we'll talk more about that later. Fisher's Choice Baits, Gin Spring. They have a generator here at the cabin and have had now for 19 years. Finally, Rit-A-Critter. That makes a difference. No more scratchy sounds upstairs. We don't, with the squirrels and rats and all live outside now. So we got that out of the way. The telephone numbers are 404-872-0750, 800-972-8255. In Georgia and in many states, this is the last weekend for turkey season. The Eastern Wild Turkey for most of us. Very, very cyclical. I'd love to hear about your season. I did not go this year. I fell off a ladder, okay? And I hurt myself. So going and walking into the woods and sitting there and tracking down one of these thunder chickens was something I didn't get to do this year. But I'd love to hear your story. Did you get one? Did it work? Did the turkeys teach you anything? Well, in this program today, a lot of our tips that we put together will have to do with turkey hunting, and I'd love to hear from you guys. But we have a lot of tips today. We have the mailbag. We have True Turn Tackle Tips from TJ, some great fishing tips, a lot of which are reminders, things that you already know, but sometimes you set aside and you don't get to them. You forget them. You don't use them. There are reasons why, believe me, between Kevin Van Dam and Roland Martin and Bill Dance and all these youngsters now that win tournaments and win the classics and catch a great number of bass, people who catch brim and stripers, the guides, they use tips and they use things, little things as they go along the way during the day that makes their catch the max. And so we get to talk about those things. And I'd love to hear your tips as response of sometimes when I pass them along. But beyond that, a lot of people will write to us during the week via our website wanting to know where can they watch O'Neill Outside. It's been on the air now. The television show has been on the air now for, good grief, it's been on the air now for 39 years, or this is our 39th year on the air. And so I guess we're used to being there. 16 minutes after the hour, 404-872-0750-800, 972-8255. We were off last week because of some, our engineer, Karen, had to have some minor surgery, and it had to happen on Friday, so we had to thought we would better set that aside. It's Karen Green who has set that, and I've mentioned this before, but you may find it interesting if you didn't hear it on other occasions. Our little studio, the Bojangles studio, is in our cabin high in the North Georgia mountains, and we send the signal over the internet to WSB Radio. They, in turn, route that signal to Karen's studio in Peachtree City, Georgia. Then it is routed sent, or whatever the case might be, to Texas, to the headquarters for Sports Broadcast Nation. Then it is rebroadcast all in microseconds to 155 SB Nation stations across the country. It's quite an engineering feat. And if I ever have a problem with anything in all this, I just fix it myself. And I can do that by calling Karen. I don't have to do anything. So that's how this works. So we are in the mountains of North Georgia on Eastern Time, and it's 17 minutes after the hour. Now, a couple of 3 weeks ago, I got wrapped up in, and this is not a science program, it's not political, and I brought the subject up because as I speak to you guys as outdoorsmen, I feel it's my responsibility, my privilege indeed, to comment on things that have to do with the outdoors. Global warming, global change, the green energy deal, not politically now, but if you're an outdoorsman and someone mentions this sort of thing, I want you to be able to respond correctly, factually. So I brought that subject up, and a listener sent a nice note to an email to my website stating how, quite frankly, how wrong I was and how irresponsible it was for me to be saying that the CO2 emissions that is warming the planet is very irresponsible for me to say that that's not because of mankind. my position is, and should be yours, that the Pleistocene era ended 11,700 years ago, in which a generous portion of the planet was covered by glaciers. And it warmed up 11,700 years ago. It warmed up, and the ice retreated to the Arctic and to the Antarctic. And it warmed up since record keeping in 1880. Surface temperature, or the temperature of our environment, rose 0.8 degrees in 140 years. That's 0.05 of a degree per year for 140 years. Do we contribute? Well, we can't help but contribute. But I would tell you, think about the fact that the Pleistocene era ended 11,700 years ago, and we've been warming up ever since. And prior to 1920, then we had no fossil fuels being burned. But it warmed up anyway. How is that? The fellow who wrote me said, because I had said that we're getting closer to the Earth in our orbit. I didn't say that. I said the Earth wobbles in its orbit. And I've done some little research since then. And indeed, the orbit of the Earth around the Sun, because of the positions of Jupiter, Saturn, Mars, and other planets, that from time to time, about once every 450,000 years, our orbit changes minutely. Is it warming up? Yes. Are we having a contribution? Yes. But so minutely, according to Science Magazine, for us to realize an effect from it will take hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. If you're an outdoorsman, you're approached on that subject, now you know better. 404-872-0750-800-972-8255. We'll get to the calls when we get back.
I've been climbing my way through the sky, searching for answers that I'll never find. Losing my breath as I fall, learning to fly.
Welcome back, everyone. 25 after the hour, you're listening to O'Neill Outside and Works Radio, nationwide every Saturday in our 29th year. And we're privileged this morning to have some calls coming in, which we enjoy very, very much. And on line number 6 here is John, and he's calling from Irondale, Alabama, one of my favorite places. Good morning, John.
Good morning, O'Neill. How are you doing today?
Outstanding. We've got some good trips planned, don't we, buddy?
We sure do. I'm looking forward to going to Bourgeois Charters down in
Paris. Yes,
area.
Indeed. We'll talk about that later in the program. Tell me about your turkey season.
Well, it was one of the best turkey seasons I've ever experienced, O'Neill. I was able to take advantage of the coronavirus lockdown in Alabama. And since I didn't have to take my child to school every day, I was free to go turkey hunting every morning with my father.
Good. Good for you. And I know you're an out. Let me ask you a question, John. If you can, and these are all surprise things, John and I are friends, fishing buddies, and so forth, and we've never been turkey hunting together, but let me ask you the following question. Generally speaking, other than a locator call, and I ask the question, do you use a locator?
I do, O'Neill.
Okay. Generally speaking, after you sit down in a blind or at a base of a tree, how many times will you call before you see and therefore are hunting a particular bird?
Well,
tough question.
I'll give you a lawyer answer,
okay,
O'Neill, and it depends on the bird.
Okay.
If if I hear a bird gobbling early in response to an owl call or a crow call, mm-hmm. and he gets really excited, well, then I'll get excited too, and I'll call back to the bird.
Okay.
But if the birds aren't cooperating, I spend a lot more time listening than I do calling.
Okay, good. So every hunt's different for you in that
That's
regard.
Right.
That's good. Well, I always want to, I use the callers like yourself, people who go often. I will manipulate you into a lesson for many other turkey hunters, rookies, people who don't go very often, people who find themselves unsuccessful. And I know you are a very successful turkey hunter. And so tell me the following, other than the obvious answer being movement, what is do you think is the biggest mistake the average turkey hunter makes?
Well, in my opinion, it's calling too much.
Okay. That's where I led you down that path, because I think the same thing.
Yeah, in fact, O'Neill, the old-timers always used to say, yelp three times and put your caller away.
Yeah, that's... I agree, 100%. Yes, indeed.
But let me tell you something. When you've got a gobbler out there wearing it out, it's really hard to keep your calls in your vest.
Yes, it is. Do you hunt usually? Do you hunt from a blind? Do you move a lot as necessary?
Well, in my younger days, I was a runner and gunner. I would, you know, owl, find a gobbler, and I would pursue him.
Mm-hmm.
But lately, since I've gotten a little slower, mm-hmm. I've tended to hunt more from blinds.
Okay.
And focused on fields early in the morning.
Aha. Have you ever used a fan to hunt a bird?
I have, and it was usually a disaster for me personally. But I have a lot of turkey hunting friends who have used fans very successfully.
Okay, I've seen a lot of videos about it. I have not done it, but I have, as you say, I've got a couple of buddies that have had some amazing results, very surprising results using a big fan.
Well, I've started using decoys a lot in the mm-hmm. over the last 4 or 5 years, and I've had a wide range of results in using the decoys, O'Neill.
Okay.
I found that sometimes a bird will come right into a decoy. Like, I killed a gobbler with a 12-inch beard this year that flew down off the roost with a couple of hens. And he came right in, and I dispatched him about 7:30 in the morning.
Oh, short hunt.
But the rest of the season, the turkeys were scared to death with my decoys.
I've had that happen, too.
Yeah, so as I progressed further into Alabama's season, I started leaving the decoys in the truck, O'Neill, and just tried to get them within gun range the old-fashioned way.
Mm-hmm. All right, one other question, John, and I do appreciate you calling. We're learning something from your call. Now, Irondale is near Birmingham, is it not?
That's correct.
Okay. Generally, are you hunting south of Birmingham? Into flatter country.
I was hunting just northeast of Birmingham in St. Clair County, Alabama.
Okay. Well, I thought you hunted. Well, good. Well, I'm glad you had a good season. Did you limit out?
Not even close, O'Neill.
What is the turkey hunting limit there in Alabama?
5 bearded turkeys per season.
5. Georgia is 3. With that, so that would indicate to me. This year?
I'm sorry, O'Neill, you broke up there. Could you repeat your question, sir?
I said it's the limit is 3 here in Georgia, 5 in Alabama, which indicates a good population. So my question was, did you see a lot of birds this year?
I saw more turkeys this season than I've ever seen in my 40-plus years of turkey hunting.
Okay, which would indicate to me there's a good population, or you were in a good spot.
Well, let's just say it was a really good spot, and we had a lot of turkeys.
There you go. Well, I'm looking forward very much to our fishing trip this October, John. John and I go down to Cajun Vista Lodge in Barataria, Louisiana, and without exception, you correct me if I'm wrong, and then I'll shut up about the fishing trip, and I'll get to some more callers, but that is, we limit out every day, don't we, John?
Absolutely. I love it.
Yes, sir. I believe that that area in Barataria and where the Mississippi River comes into the Atchafalaya Basin probably is the best inshore saltwater fishing on the coast of the United States. Would you think that's an out-of-order comment?
I think you're spot on, O'Neill.
There you go. John, thanks for calling, buddy. I hope to see you soon.
Absolutely, O'Neill. Take care, my friend.
You bet. Glad you called. I really do. There you go. So let me see if I can know how to drop these calls. There you go. There you go. Well, welcome back. It's 33 after the hour. Great call from John. It's always a pleasure to speak to and entertain a call, discuss strategies, limits, and things of that nature with an experienced hunter or an experienced fisherman. And believe me, this John that just we just spoke to is indeed that person. Hey, here's our old buddy Milton Crabapple. Good morning, Milton. What do you say?
O'Neill? Milton,
yes, sir.
Crabapple. How you doing?
Yes,
this
sir.
Morning?
Milton, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Good to hear from you.
You know, you got to watch old John. You know,
I know,
somebody
he's
told
sneaky,
me
isn't he?
They saw him going into the Kroger store the other day wearing rubber gloves on his hand and wearing a Zorro mask.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah, sure.
I don't doubt it.
You're talking yes, about sir. Turkeys
oh,
now.
Okay, let's do.
I believe, you know, I had a good season this year, but it wasn't long. I killed the biggest turkey I ever killed opening day of the season. But then we got shut down by the coronavirus, you know, didn't get to go back. But
I'll
tell you, I believe next year folks are going to be, now I'm just going to say this, a lot of folks don't agree with this, but I'm just talking about all across the country, you know. I believe they're going to not see too many turkeys next year. Because all these folks that ain't been working, you know, they say the turkey population is down all over the place, in general.
Yep.
Now.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people hunting, huh?
A lot of people hunting. The turkey killing numbers, from what I understand, are way up this year.
I see.
So the numbers of turkeys are down, and the number of them killed has been up. Plus, you know, the fur prices has done hit rock bottom, so there ain't nobody. Lots of folks have quit trapping, so the predator population is going to go way up too.
That's
I just
a good
believe
observation.
A lot of people around the country are going to be kind of disappointed next year when they start turkey hunting.
Mm-hmm. But I believe that too. That's a good observation. And I have another question for you. I need to go to a break. Can you hold on a couple of minutes because I have a question for you that I want my audience to hear the answer.
Well, I reckon so.
All right. Well, stick around right there. It's 36 after the hour, and this is O'Neill. We'll be back to talk to Milton.
I want to be a castaway and
leave the world behind. Take a tropic holiday, say goodbye.
Well, we're in the middle of a conversation. Welcome back. This is Works Radio and O'Neill Outside. We're in the middle of a conversation with one of our favorite callers and favorite personalities, and that is Milton Crabapple. And Milton's still on the line, I believe. There he is. Good morning again, Milton. I have a question for you. Ready? Okay, wait, what? Okay. Let's get give
Milton. Oh, is that you, O'Neill?
Yeah, that's yeah. Wake back up again so that we can have a chat. Ready?
Yes, sir.
I have a question for you. What is the most, and now you hunt in the mountains in North Georgia, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Okay, turkey hunting, that is. All right. Do you think it makes a difference when you're hunting in the mountains in North Georgia that whether you can call a turkey uphill or downhill?
Well, I believe it's a whole lot easier to call him uphill.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
Now, here's the thing, O'Neill.
Okay.
You know, early season hunting in the mountains is tough because if a turkey's roosting way up on a ridge and there ain't no leaves on the trees, he can see you coming from half a mile away.
Yes.
Because he's away. So you can't get out and prowl around a lot of times the way you can on flat ground.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can see, especially if you've got to cross a field or a pasture or something like that. But now, they roost way up high on the side of the mountain. So you know they got to come downhill to get down to the pastures and the fields.
Right.
So they come downhill, but people say you can't call them across a creek or you can't call them across a fence, but I sit and watch them cross through fences and cross creeks all day long.
I agree.
And I watch them fly across fences.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they can't go nowhere up there where I am without crossing a creek or crossing a fence.
Certainly.
But you know what? They're peculiar animals, I'll tell you something.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I believe it's a lot easier to call them uphill than it is to call them downhill.
I think so, too. And I just wanted to make that point since you are a what we'll call a mountain turkey hunter. It's easier to call them uphill. Well, did you have a good season?
I had a good one. I got one opening day, and I did something I never have done before.
What's that? Tell me about it.
Well, I saw a flock of 13 turkeys. They had two big long beard gobblers in it, mm-hmm. and several jakes. And I saw them with my binoculars. They was about 250 yards away, maybe 200 yards away, I guess.
Okay.
But I knew when I got out of my truck, they was going to see me when I walked across the pasture to where I was going to hunt. So I just kind of put my head down and went on. I said, they're going to see me anyhow, but I ain't going to sit in the truck all day. So sure enough, they saw me. They didn't really spook, but they left when they saw me coming across there. They went on, left the field, went on up on the mountain. So I went and hunted till, now this was in the afternoon, about 2 o'clock. So at about 5, I said, I'm going to hunt till about 5 o'clock or till whenever my butt tells me I got to get up.
Okay.
So at 5 o'clock, I got up and I said, walking back, and I said, you know, this pasture goes up, the part of it like a steep hill, like a little mountain. We call it the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pasture, but it goes up like a big knob. I started going back and I said, I wonder if them rascals come back out into that big pasture. So I snuck up to the top of that knob, and I had one of them turkey fans in my vest.
Mm-hmm.
So I pulled that thing out and spread it open and kind of held it up over my face, and I crouched down. When I got up, I peeked up, and I could see them turkeys out there about 175 yards away. They'd come back into that pasture. And then as soon as I saw them, they saw me, and them heads come up, every one of them like a periscope. And I just crouched down and where they couldn't see my head, and I just waved that thing sideways a little bit. Well, here them rascals come. And I'm telling you something, I ducked back down again. I said, maybe I ought to shut down. I said, no, I can't. I won't know where they are. So I just crouched down, and they come across there and come up that hill and I poked my gun barrel out through there and shot one of them right in the face.
Good for you.
Yeah, sure. And you know what? Now, they come up to when about 12 or 15 yards from me, and I shot one of them, and the other one just stood around. He didn't know what to do. They was all puzzled.
Uh-huh.
They said they ain't never been shot at by one of their own kind. But anyhow, could have shot the other one, too. Had a bead on it, but you know, I didn't want to do that. One turkey was enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
Let the other one stay in that flock. But I'm telling you something, I ain't never seen nothing like it. I've seen it on TV, but I ain't never tried it before. But I'm telling you, I ain't going to poke my head over the hill no more without one of them fans poking them, providing I know there ain't nobody sitting over there hunting.
Right, so it really worked for you using a fan this year.
It worked for me just like you see it on TV.
How about that?
It was just a textbook. I mean, they come from 175 yards away. I didn't call. I didn't do nothing.
Well, I didn't move
around. I just sat there. His hay was about a foot tall. Mm-hmm. And I just got down on my knees, sat there, and waved that thing around a little bit. You know how turkeys do.
Yes.
They wave that fan from side to side a little bit. And I was looking out from under it. I'm telling you, they come all the way across there just as pretty as you please. The whole flock did.
Well, I appreciate that story, Milton. That'll represent a lot of encouragement for people to maybe give fanning a try next season, sure enough. Let's see, season ends
today. Yeah, you know, Dude's working on writing a book.
Oh, yeah?
He's writing a story about we've had a great uncle who used to be a Texas Ranger.
Uh-huh.
He had quite a career, dude, starting to write a book about him.
Oh, yeah? What was his name?
His name was Woodrow Crabapple.
Okay.
I'm telling you, he was something, too.
I'll bet he was.
Yeah. So I'll tell you some stories about Woodrow sometimes.
All right. I'd love to hear that. You come on up. We'll finish the season on the porch up here with a beverage. How about that?
Sounds good to me. Stop by the jail.
Yeah. Be sure and bring your guitar.
I'll do it. Much obliged.
You bet. Thank you, Milton. I appreciate the story and the encouragement, and I'll see you soon. Right now at 47 after the hour, let's talk to our friend from St. Simon's, Mark Noble. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning, O'Neill.
Well, I got you up early, but that's not unusual, is it?
No, sir. This time of the year, you know, we're working on them road trout pretty hard, and we're going to catch that morning tide and get out there on them.
Well, good. Are you busy? You have a lot of people, since they're not working, a lot of people calling you to give it a try?
Well, you know, O'Neill, it was slowed down, you know, for, you know, all the guys down here on the coast for a while. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, the past really week and a half or so, you know, they kind of opened up St. Simon. Some places are open, like restaurants and hotels.
Okay.
So people are staying down here. So we've been blessed that things are starting to slowly open up, businesses picking up. And, man, it couldn't have been timed perfectly more than that.
Fantastic. Well, let me give our audience a little bit of a history, if I can, and that is that Mark and I have probably fished together, what, 12, maybe 15 times?
Yeah, I think actually probably a few more times than that, O'Neill.
Yeah, it could be, and we've caught 120-pound tarpon. We've caught 45-pound redfish. We've limited out on trout. We've caught Spanish mackerel, and we've caught kings. Man, we've loaded the boat every time, hadn't we?
Yeah, we sure have. And, you know, you was mentioning them trout. I remember Hunter Cole there with Pure Fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he got introduced to the Thunder Chicken down there with an artificial with no weight on it. Remember down there in Christmas Creek, O'Neill?
I do and remember that, yes.
That was some kind of fishing trip out there.
We were catching a trout on every cast.
Yeah, well, I mean, we went through 100 fish so fast that, mm-hmm. you know, if you wasn't there, you couldn't explain it.
That was great. What a great trip. And that's a casting float that Mark invented, and he's got the greatest name for a casting float I ever heard. And
you still Mark? There, O'Neill? Yep, you kind of broke out just for a second.
Okay, and the name of your casting float is?
It's called the Thunder Chicken.
The Thunder Chicken.
It is, Yeah, it's a popping cork. My two daughters named the float, and we trademarked Thunder Chicken, you know, because we was going to patent that float. But it's the first castable popping cork on the market. And let me tell you, if you like popping cork fishing, the cork's been around for a while, and everybody's copying it. But if you want to fish the newest presentation on speckled trout, fish a free line with a float called the Thunder Chicken, and you can cast perhaps 40 yards plus.
You bet, and it really does work. Now, how can my – got a huge audience this time of the morning, and that all of us want to go – they all want to go fishing, and a lot of them are not working right now, so – how can they be in touch with Mark Noble to get in on some of this great fishing?
Okay, well, you know, if you're looking to get away, St. Simons has opened up quite a bit. So go to georgiafishing.net. That's N-E-T, georgiafishing.net, or stsimonsfishingcenter.com. And you'll be able to catch up on what we're doing right now. Give us a call or give us an email. But my land, y'all, if you got cabin fever, St. Simons Island, well, it's the place to come.
I will tell in support of that. Now, that's New Orleans. No, pardon me. St. Simons, give me the contact information again, please, one more time.
Okay, georgiafishing.net or stsimonsfishingcenter.com.
Okay. I will tell everybody that I've been with Mark probably 20 times, and we've caught a limit every single time. And I believe we had one tarpon about 120 pounds, didn't we?
Yeah, we was doing that show trying to catch red drum, and somehow you ended up on the rod in the middle of a real good red drum bite on a big tarpon. And O'Neill, I'm going to tell you, that fish punished you pretty good.
Oh, yeah, everybody else was catching one redfish after another, and there you hooked me up with about a 120-pound tarpon that, what, took an hour and a half?
Yeah, that was something else. You know, that's the thing. When you're fishing on the Georgia coast, even though we've got a short coastline, the diversity in the amount of fish that's on the Georgia coast is absolutely incredible. So if you hadn't experienced this, just like O'Neill's tried to show people on his television show for years, Georgia is one of the top fishing destinations in the world for saltwater fish in a subtropical region.
Absolutely. You don't have to go to Florida.
You don't have to. Florida's
okay.
Great.
All right. One more question, you know, just for reference here, then I'll let you go and you say hello to Lisa, and I wish you well this weekend and throughout the season. But tell me this. What is the biggest fish you ever caught while guiding someone?
Well, the biggest fish that we've caught was some people out of Macon, Georgia. They came down, they said they wanted to fish for something big. And I said, what's your idea big, over 100? And they said, well, that's big, anything bigger. So I said, well, what about over 500? And they said, yeah. So we actually broke the IGFA world record that day on 80-pound class line.
Right, hurry, I got to go.
810-pound hammerhead.
How big was the fish? Quick.
14
oh, my
feet.
Goodness. All right, we'll talk again soon. I got to go, pal.
All right,
good luck to you. We'll talk again soon. This is O'Neill. Yeah, we're the first hour of Outdoor for O'Neill Outside, and Works Radio's about over, but we've got time first now to talk to James, and he's calling from Lilburn, and he's talking turkey hunting. Good morning, James. What's going on?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Hey. Yes, I can.
Great, great. This was the best turkey season of all time.
What do you attribute that to?
We didn't kill anything last year.
Okay.
I don't know. We just had a good hatch. Plus, nobody much was having to work, so just had a lot more people out there after them, and a lot more turkeys got whacked this year.
Keeping them stirred around, huh?
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
What part of the state do you hunt mostly?
North Alabama.
Okay. Well, yeah, we had another caller, of course, this morning said there's plenty of turkeys in Alabama. And your season limit is 5?
Right. Well, I almost got there this year, too.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
That's good.
I tell you, one of the most enjoyable things about this turkey season was the property that I hunt has got a small pond, you know, a farm pond on it.
Uh-huh.
Almost as big as a lake, but I caught those big old bluegill. My dad called them blue nose brim.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they were just pre-spawn.
Oh boy!
But I found them in one corner of that lake, and I was using a little popping bug on my fly rod.
And
I wore them out there one day at lunchtime, and I said, "Well, that was great fun." But I'm gonna catch some of these bass out of here. So I put on a great big huge bass bug.
Okay.
Went back and all I did was catch great big huge blue nose brim.
You stuck with the brim, huh? It's a good thing brim don't weigh 12 or 13 pounds, so they'd pull you in the lake.
I'm telling you, these brim were a bigger tussle than the bass were.
Oh gosh.
And they were big enough to fillet. And
I
filleted me. I think I kept 5 of them and filleted them and had me a fine fish supper that night.
Good deal. All right, I got to go to the break, James. Hey, you had a good turkey season and you caught some big brim. That's a pretty good combination, and I'll see you.